I'm told the number one fear people have is speaking in public. It's the one fear I don't have. Join me for the Love Speak series, where we leave fear behind and we speak love. Loving our story, loving speaking, doing what we love, loving each other, and loving ourselves. Our stories are what connect us and make us better humans. So join me and my Love Speaks friends for some stories, some laughs, some inspiration, some speaker tips, and some unexpected truth. It's the Love Speaks series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Welcome to the Love Speaks series. Here's your host, Sally Lou Loveman.
Okay, everybody, it's March. We're here. That's a good thing, right? It's officially, right? It's a good thing, Edie. Yes, this Hallelujah. Is my guest. Hallelujah. Yeah, it's officially been a year since we went on lockdown. So I think we can all agree that it's been a long road. But like my guest, Edie Allen, knows, all long roads are usually worth the journey. They're rough. They're hard. We stumble. But we're here, we're grateful, and we're ready for the change that's coming and a world filled with more love. My guest today, Edie Allen, is going to be talking about transformation. And let me just tell you this, you want to listen to it its entirety. But first, a word from my new sponsor. I love saying it because it feels so good to say it. And it's a brand that I have admired for years, Red Spade Environments, as the sponsor of the Love Speaks series podcast. Red Spade is the premier residential landscape architecture and design build firm based in Winnetka and Chicago. It is the true hands-on approach of the Red Spade team, which differentiates them. Why? Because they listen. And only then they provide you with creative and meaningful design solutions. They embrace a practical approach to functionality and sustainability and will only provide fair and honest advice to create real value for your home, where we're spending a lot of time, right, guys? Large or small, hardscape, softscape, pools, patios, pergolas, fireplaces, outdoor kitchens. Yes, I would like all of them. And sustainable gardens. The Red Spade team has done it all. So what's on your wish for 2021? I'll ask you that, Edie. Locally grown, locally sourced, the Red Spade team are your neighbors. They're deeply rooted in the communities in which they live, work, and play. You're as likely to see them in the grocery store or on the baseball field as you are to see them with boots on in your backyard. They are seasoned professionals who bring 30 plus years of landscape, architecture, design, and construction experience to make your vision a reality. So extend your indoor living space, because we're living at home a lot, and create your own unique outdoor environment. Give a call or shoot a note to the Red Spade team and have them stop over for your initial coffee chat. They're in the notes, so you'll find them there. Red Spade, landscape, design, consultation, installation, management. Let Red Spade bring your environment to life. Oh my goodness, love, love, love Red Spade. And thank you for being my sponsor here at the Love Speak Series podcast. And like I said, we are speaking transformation. And my guest today, wow, is all I can say. She's a speaker, truly, you're a speaker, an artist, an advocate, a breakthrough specialist whose story is so powerful that you, like I said, will want to listen to it from beginning to end. No shuttling forward, people, because missing one piece of Edie's story is a disservice to your human being. It's hard to believe that I've never met Edie Allen, because through our conversations and our texts, I really feel as if we're childhood friends.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you call me Lulu. So, I mean, come on, that right there. We were brought together by a producer who booked us on the Action Catalyst podcast, and she decided that we should know each other. So, thank you, Amanda Jones.
Yeah.
Because,
so grateful.
This friendship has been very special for me. Edie's talk for Steven Tyler's Janie's Fund, which brings hope and healing to girls who have suffered trauma or abuse and neglect. Will never leave your heart. You will see it in the show notes. The clip is there. And either will Edie. So here she is, my BFF that I haven't met yet, Edie Allen from, where are you, Charleston?
In Charleston? I'm in Charleston.
Yeah, in the sunny,
South Kakalaki.
But you spent a lot of time in Chicago, and you have a 312 phone number, so I love you for that. She's a 312 girl.
Yes, I am.
Edie, how is love speaking to you today?
Oh, well, through your voice, my dear, through your voice, for sure.
Well, no, just, your voice is extremely powerful. So you know, just like what happened this morning when you woke up, like how are you feeling in this moment?
Oh, so grateful, just incredibly filled and fueled and excited and energized and oh man, life is just so good. And I just want to soak it up.
That is what we call transformation. And for you to speak those words, having the story that you have to tell, I believe that our stories are our superpower. And your superpower, it actually brings me to tears. When I saw you speak, and I was in the car, I think we were driving to Cleveland. I don't know. It was during the pandemic, so who knows? We were in the car, and Amanda told me to watch your clip when you spoke at Janie's Fund, and I want you to tell the story of how that happened. But when I saw you embody your story, and at the end, every young woman in the room rose to her feet because you saved them. You saved them, and not everybody had your story, and not even anybody had even a piece of your story, but a lot of people might have. And they rose to their feet and they basically, with their ovation, said, thank you for your powerful story. And to me, that is how your love speaks daily. So what did that feel like? And then I want you to tell us what brought you to that stage.
Wow. Well, it felt like connection. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it had all been, for something.
Right.
You know, like everything that had happened for that particular moment in time so that I could be a voice for those who, like myself, did not have a voice for so long.
Right.
And I was approached after sharing my story by not only the guest in the audience, but husbands of survivors, staff, like the catering crew.
That's when you know.
Security guards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It touched every heart in the room.
Yeah. And they shared their stories with me.
Exactly.
You know, they weren't just telling me thank you or
right
or accolades about what I had done, but it was like, oh, I want to tell you this happened to me, or this happened to my wife, or this happened to my mom, or this happened to my cousin. And it was just so, so powerful. And there was a beautiful young man in the audience, and he was just in tears, and his partner was there with him. And he said, you know, his partner was saying, he never told me what happened to him until today, until you spoke. And
right.
He pulled me aside and said, this happened to me. And I've always known something was bothering him. And now I know. And that young man and I developed a relationship and a sweet friendship. And I was able to connect to a lot of those people afterwards. And it means the world to me.
Yeah.
And
your story had purpose. You survived physical and sexual trauma at an early age. You left home at 15. You were in and out of foster care. You had a mom whose boyfriend created a very unsafe home for you. And now you are helping. I mean, you raised $2.8 million for Janie's Fund just on the power of your story that night. How, we're definitely talking transformation today, but give us a little, like, for those who haven't seen the clip yet or don't know your story, they will see it, obviously, because it's right in the show notes. But what was your life like before you left home at 15?
Oh, wow. Well, my mother also created an unsafe environment, mm-hmm. because she herself had grown up in an unsafe environment.
Right.
And she was powerless over that and over the feelings of all of that. So she was checked out a lot, and she was either at work or in the bed. Valium was a method that she used to cope, and right. she read a lot. So she spent a lot of time isolating. Mm-hmm. And I understand that today, and as an adult who did the same thing. But she was also very violent. So she took a lot of her pain and suffering out on me and my younger brothers.
Right.
And so I didn't really have a safe place to go to tell what was happening to me. I didn't, mm-hmm. I didn't trust any adult right. in my world. And
except for Miss Barksdale.
Oh, Miss Barksdale. Yes.
We'll get
God
to
bless
that.
Her. Yeah. God bless her. Yes. And yeah, so, it felt like I was trapped. I felt like a slave to my mother, because I was, you know, she just had me doing all the things that a mom should be doing mm-hmm. in terms of taking care of the house and my brothers and fetching things for her. And then I felt like a sex slave to Bill.
Right. Right.
And so I just felt trapped. That's the best way I can describe it is yeah. I just felt trapped in my life and in my world. And I would climb this tree in my backyard and I would get as high in the sky as I could. And I just would look out over the skyline and see the world and think, I'm going to be out there one day. I'm going to be out there one day. And this tree
literally
became
flying.
Very special to me. Yeah. Literally flying. Like I just want to be out there. And I always had like a very strong connection to nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I just felt I had a big, I had a strong faith as well.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's side of the family had a strong faith, and I had not seen my dad since I was five. My mom left mm-hmm. my dad when I was about 5 years old, and that's when Bill came into our lives. Mm-hmm. And so life was scary. That's the best way I can describe it. And, but I had this voice inside that let me know it was going to be okay.
Do you visit the tree? Do you ever go back?
Well,
to where
my
you
mother,
came?
Sometimes, my mom lives next door to that tree. So
oh, okay.
I have not been back
okay.
there in a while.
Okay.
I visited my mom a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. And how did that go?
You know, it's a bit of a challenge because it's challenging for me to be in a conversation with people who are in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that it's their truth. So they're not in denial
right.
in their own truth, but they may be in denial of, some facts.
Yeah, it's called her Valium, you know, it's the only way she can cope is to believe yeah. her own truth, just like Valium
exactly.
dulls it out and her own
right.
truth dulls it out. I know
right.
from your story that Bill is gone. And sadly, he took someone with him when he died.
Yeah.
And you were trying to say, listen to me. And then, you know, a life was lost. Well, two lives, but one that didn't need to be lost. So you say that sharing your story isn't easy. It never will be. But doing the right thing is never easy, right? And so obviously you are in service to others when you tell your story and you're doing the hard thing. Had you tell us about how Steven Tyler, you know, from Aerosmith, this rock star, came into your life and how you ended up sharing your story, which you just said a little tiny dose of it, but you go into it in your talk on that Janie's Fun stage. How did that all happen?
Well, so growing up in Greer, South Carolina, you know, there's this highway that connects Greenville to Spartanburg, and Greer's kind of right in the middle of it. And mm-hmm. so I would just go as far as I could go, like as often as I could. So up and down that highway, music became a soother for me, mm-hmm. and a way of escaping, you know, music.
It's right,
music.
Of course.
And it's so healing and powerful. And the first time I heard Janie's Got a Gun, I pulled over on the side of the road and just wept and wept and wept and wept because...
How old were you?
She was 1989.
I can't do the math, but were you a teenager?
Yeah, so 74, 74, 84, 25.
Okay.
Something about like something around that. And I just felt seen and heard. And I just felt like there was so much more to life.
Mm-hmm.
And, I felt like, oh my gosh, like if this band is singing about this topic, then that means they know,
right.
They know that this is wrong, that
right.
this is bad. And that what could happen is we feel the way we feel, and young women who don't feel like they have any recourse may actually hurt others just to protect themselves.
Yes.
And
to stop the pain.
And to stop the pain.
Right.
And so I just was blown away by that. And I always have loved Aerosmith so much and listened to them. They were a big part of my growing up. And so I just said, I want to meet Steven Tyler and I want to hug him and thank him one day.
Mm-hmm. And so you're 25.
Yeah. It was about that. And so fast forward, or not too long after that, actually, I was living in Charleston, South Carolina, and I met a friend, his name's Chuck LaBella, and he's in the industry, he's in the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we just became very good friends and stayed in touch. He was living in New York, I was living in Charleston, and we just stayed in touch. It's a long story how he was in Charleston visiting a friend that mm-hmm. he'd grown up with in Long Island. And so that friend was a friend of mine because he was working for the Merchant Marines, or excuse me, the Naval base here in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chuck and I stayed friends, as I said, and I knew that he had met Steven. He had spent some time with Steven. And so I had also, just right place, right time, found out that Steven had started Janie's Fund. I was just in the process of about to start Janie's Fund,
mm-hmm.
and this organization to help girls who'd been through similar things that I'd been through.
Right.
And so I reached out to Chuck and said, you know, hey, did you know that Steven's doing this? And he said, no, I didn't. And I said, well, please, you know, tell him I said, thank you. And I had decided to, this is fast forward, I'll try to make it short, but I decided to take myself a few years ago, about not quite 4 years ago, on a joy journey. I was like,
take me.
I want to go on a joy journey.
Right.
You know, that one of my favorite sayings is the happier you are, the more in harmony you are in your thoughts, in your words, and in your actions with who you really are.
Mm.
And I love that. It's an Abraham teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And
love Abraham.
Me too. And so I decided, well, you know, if happiness is the key to it all, then I'm just going to go on a joy journey. So I decided every day for as long as it took to go on this joy journey. And no matter what happened during the day, if it didn't bring me joy, I would just shift gears and focus on something else that did.
Right.
And so that's what I decided to do. And so I was waking up every day, and if a conversation didn't bring me joy, I just changed the topic till it did, or I just exited the conversation, right? Oh, it's time to go. Okay. And, you know, no matter what I was doing, nothing I watched on television, unless it brought me joy, or listened to things
on
the radio.
Were you working?
I was working.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so,
so it's not
coaching.
Like you stopped working. You were still doing your business of consulting with others, and your and you know, all of the things that you already do to help others heal, which is beautiful because you're using your story for that.
It's but life coaching. You know, it's joyous.
It is joyous. but you're everything you do. You're doing like, so did you stop cleaning your toilets?
My husband cleans the toilets.
There you go.
And so, yeah, but I just found the joy in whatever I was doing, I was doing. I found the joy, or I brought the joy.
Right.
And around the 10th day, I woke up at 4 a.m. and I heard this voice say, Edie, get online. And I love that voice. I trust that voice. That voice has saved my life. And so I got online. I'm like, got online at 4 a.m. And there was Vishen Lakhiani with Mind Valley. Mm-hmm, I love his stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's put together an awesome festival that's like TED Talks during the day meets Carnival at night. And so he had put the whole A-Fest online for free for like a week. And I was thrilled because I'd wanted to go and had missed the opportunity to go to Awesome Fest, and here it was. And there was a speaker, Bo Eason, who was sharing how to tell your story and how to use your story for personal power. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is why the voice woke me up.
Right.
I want to do this. And so I went out to study with Bo. Some friends put a GoFundMe together to help me study with him and get to California, and just everything fell into place.
Wow.
Girlfriend let me stay at her house. Friends donated air miles. And so while I was in Santa Barbara studying with Bo, it just took me to another level. And I was able to stand on the stage the first time in my life there with him and share my story.
Was there an audience
of it? Oh yeah, there was about 135 people there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was the first time, and I was terrified, but I just did it. And and it was just, you know, you really only share your one true sentence. You don't share your story. You just find one true sentence, mm-hmm. and you learn how to tell that.
Mm-hmm.
And my true sentence was pretty awful.
Do you remember what it was?
I do.
That you can find the laughter is transformational. There you go.
Oh my gosh. You are
funny.
Yeah. It was like, I remember the whole room going, oh wow, you know, like that really happened. And
will you share it with us?
It was that the hardest day of my life was crawling under my bed, knowing that there was cat pee and dog feces under my bed. But I crawled under there anyway to get away from my mother, who was trying to kill me because she had found out I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the safest place I could be.
Yeah.
And so
I found comfort in what was a very unsafe place.
Yeah. I crawled under there because it was just a bad situation all the way around, you know. And
right.
And so, yeah, my mom used to lock the animals in my room. So there was always like this cat pee, dog poop, cat poop everywhere in my room. So when I got home from school every day, the first thing I did was clean all that up, but I wasn't cleaning it out from under my bed. So when my mom found out I was pregnant and she was beating me and Bill was trying to pull her off of me. And my brothers are screaming and crying, and I'm just in shock. Like, I cannot believe this is actually happening. And I'm like crawling in my room, and I'm crawling under my bed, just trying to get away from her. Mm-hmm. And I saw what was under there, and I didn't care. You know, I had to do it. And I just, so when I said that one true sentence, it was true. It was true. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I could say the hardest thing that's really ever happened to me out loud, then maybe I can tell my story, and maybe I can get to it in a way that others can resonate with, and maybe will help people.
And Bo helped you craft it.
Yeah.
There's
actually a woman that works with Bo. Her name's Mary Kincaid, and she is a tuning fork for the truth of your story. Oh my gosh, she's amazing. I love her so much. And she and I connected that day, and she was like, we're going to help. We're going to do this. We're mm-hmm. going to craft this out for you. Mm-hmm. And so I worked with Mary privately.
Okay.
But the end of the weekend, so the last day of the weekend, my friend Chuck drove up from LA and took me to dinner that night. And he knew that I was there to try and tell my story. So I said, will you please tell Stephen? We're at dinner. And I said, will you please tell Stephen? I said, thank you for what he's doing. And I want to tell my story. If there's any way I can help, I'd love it. Mm-hmm. And he said, why don't you tell him yourself? So he texts Stephen. Stephen texts back, tell Edie I'll call her tomorrow.
And he did.
Like, sure you will. He's right. Tyler. But he did.
And he did.
We had a 3-hour and 20-minute conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
And how I know and why that's not only is it significant for the length of time that this beautiful human gave me and just listened to me, and he shared his stories with me as well. But 3/20 has always been very significant, because that's the day that the child that I gave birth to was, that's his birthday is 3/20.
Oh my goodness.
So when I got off the phone, I was like, how long was that conversation?
3/20.
3 hours and 20 minutes. Exactly. It was like, of course it was.
So Stephen
asked me to share my story, and I did.
And that's how it happened. Well, he is a beautiful soul, and his wife is there. They're incredible people. I think that it's important that we discuss your son. So you were 15. You became pregnant. Were you 14?
I was 14 when I got pregnant. Yeah.
And yeah. Bill, your abuser, was the father.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then
I told a guidance counselor. I told a guidance counselor in eighth grade, thanks to Miss Barksdale.
Right. Your teacher. What did she teach mm-hmm. you? What was she English, Miss Barksdale?
She was social. She social was studies. Creative. I was going to say social studies, but it's actually creative writing.
Okay.
A girlfriend who knew Bill. Bill was kind of stalking me at school, and everywhere I would go, he was there. And so a girlfriend knew it. And then we talked to a guidance counselor, and the guidance counselor said, I told her everything that happened. And then she said, okay. I said, well, what will happen next? And she said, well, social services will be called, you know, you'll probably go into foster care system. And I said, well, will my brothers be with me? And she said, probably not. It's really hard to place families,
right,
you know, children together. So they'll probably go to somewhere else. And I said, well, this conversation didn't happen.
Right. Because you wanted to protect your brothers.
Yeah. That they were basically my children at that time. And so I said that, then forget that this happened. So I went home. I told Bill that I'd told someone.
Right.
And he left me alone for the rest of the eighth grade year. And then the summer going into my ninth grade year, we went on a trip. It was a business trip for him in this truck. It was like one seat. And then this big, had equipment in the back of it. We were delivering from South Carolina to, Reno, Nevada.
And you went with him because
my mom
you had to.
Maybe. Yeah.
Right.
I thought it was a family vacation that we were going to make this vacation out of it, because my mom was packing suitcases. And I just assumed she was packing one for herself. because we were going to be gone for like 2 weeks. And then the day before the trip, I realized that my mom's not coming. And she said, well, I can't go. I have to stay here and work. And work was like where she also hid out. And so I'm like, oh my God. Like, and she didn't know, she had to have known. She was asking me a lot of questions. And I just was like devastated. And long story short, Bill rates me on that trip. And got me, and I got pregnant. And that was the last time that he ever touched me inappropriately, but it was, you know, it was devastating to my life. And
but you gave birth to this baby.
I did. Yeah. Because my mother decided that was the best thing, that she and Bill were going to get married, because they weren't married at that time. They were going to get married. Bill was going to adopt the child, and then that way they could look like martyrs.
Okay.
I guess. I mean, that's my interpretation of it.
So what really happened? You gave birth.
I gave birth, and my mom named the baby. So when I came to, I said, what did I have? And you know, she had isolated me. Like the day after she found out that I was pregnant, like we went to school. She told my teachers, Edie's getting out of school. She's pregnant. They wanted to know who the baby's father was, of course, because they thought it was a student. Mm-hmm. And my mom's like, it's none of your business. She got knocked up on a trip out west over the summer. It's oh my God, that's what you're going to tell people? That's what we're going with here?
Right.
So, so then Bill became the only person I was interacting with. My mother didn't hardly want to even look at me or speak to me, of course. My brothers were ashamed of me. They're getting picked on at school. I can only imagine.
And you're not in school. Are you being homeschooled? No,
I'm just at home.
Right.
You can tell I'm being homeschooled by, you know, General Hospital.
Exactly.
Luke and Laura.
Hey, Luke and Laura. Thank God for Luke and Laura.
Oh my God.
I'm sure that theme song. Laura was raped, that theme song, I'm sure that is not one that brings you comfort.
You know it. And I'm reading like books like Children in the Attic or Flowers in the Attic, V.C. Andrews, I think. Oh my goodness. So yeah, that was my life. And I was making lunch for Bill every day. He would come home from work and I would make lunch and we would watch television together. And he was, so talk about a wacky situation of just having to, I learned how to be in denial as well.
Right.
Pretty good.
Of course. And you had to survive.
Yeah.
But you were 15. When you left home. So where did you go? And you didn't take the baby with you?
No.
Or did you?
No. Because first of all, I'm very grateful. This is going to sound awful, but this is my truth. Mm-hmm. When I gave birth, they first put him in my arms. I had no clue what to do. I was 15 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what in the world to do. So I'm grateful that I did not have a mothering connection to him, mm-hmm. because had I, it would have been unbearable, because being a boy, there's no way Bill was going to let me keep that child or my mother. They mm-hmm. decided together that was going to be their baby. And they were going to raise him. Talk about not having a voice. When women say, I didn't have a voice, like, I know what that feels like to not have a say-so in the baby that you just carried for 9 months and you can't even name.
That was brought to you against your will by rape. Right. So
at gunpoint.
Oh, yeah. Okay. At gunpoint. Wow.
Yeah. So it was a bad situation and all the way around. And I just could not wait to leave. And so had I had a girl, this is also going to sound awful, but had I had a girl, I would have fled and no one would have ever seen us again, because I wouldn't have wanted that to happen to her.
Got it.
But being that it was a boy, I just felt that he was safer.
Safer, but not at all safe.
In the world.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
So where did you go?
I went to stay. I ran one night. My mom hit me. Like, she was still beating me, beating us. And there was this board that she used when she was angry at. It was actually a piece of art that I made for her, but she turned it into this god-awful weapon. Yeah. And she hit me across the back with it. And it took my breath away. But when I arched back, I could see the back door. So I just ran out. I'm like, I'm out of here. And it was just an impulse and instinct. And so I left. And then I heard Bill yelling my name. And he's like, come back here. Let me give you some money. And so I walked over to him and he took all the money he had out of his wallet. It was like $23, something like that. And he said, I'd give you more if I had it. Call me when you get where you're going. Let me know you made it okay. Mm. So I left, I went to stay with this guy that I was dating. I called him. I went to a house, used their phone, called him, and he took me to their farmhouse. His stepmom and dad had a farmhouse about an hour away. And it was as far as I could think of to go. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed there, called social services, had to have my pictures taken with the bruises and the mm-hmm. But I didn't tell them that I'd had a baby.
Right. I mean, gosh.
No.
So mm-hmm. much conflict here. So much conflict.
So yeah, so the youth leaders of the church that I was going to, I was playing softball for this youth group at this church that I was going to. And I really, really loved the youth leader and my softball coach. And his name was Charles Shelton. And he and his wife really cared about me and cared mm-hmm. for me. And they knew they weren't asking, but they knew.
Right.
And so I called when I got to where I was going, I called my best girlfriend that I'd grown up with. I used to go to her house when I was little and just kind of get away from it all. We met when
Is she the one that point blank asked you, is Bill messing with you? You say that in your talk.
No, that was a girl in school.
Girl. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But they knew her. All the people in my neighborhood knew, you know, it was a small neighborhood. And they all knew, but nobody was really saying anything mm-hmm. or doing anything and mm-hmm. keeping to themselves. And, so her name is Cindy. And, I just spent the weekend with her. As a matter of fact, we're so tight. Mm. And so she's the one also suggested I do the GoFundMe so that they could help me tell
right.
my story.
Right.
And so I called Cindy. She said, the Sheltons want to talk to you. Please call them. So I did. I called them and they said, you know, little girl, you okay? You know, we want you to come and stay with us. Would you come and stay with us? And so I said, yes.
Angels.
And they went through the process. Yeah. So I legally emancipated from my mother.
Right.
And then they became my lay guardians in the fosters. And they didn't have to go through the foster care system, thank goodness.
Right.
So I stayed with them for a little bit. And then,
Wow. So I have two big questions I have 400 million questions, but I have two really big ones that I'd like to, the first one, just because so much here. Sorry, I'm really stammering for words because I don't even know where to begin. But the one thing I really, really want to know, which I'm assuming everyone listening wants to know, is do you have a relationship with your son?
It's hard. It's the answer is it's complicated.
Okay.
That's the best answer I can give you, that it's complicated.
We can leave it at that.
Because I don't really consider him my son mm-hmm. Because there's so many implications to that. Mm-hmm. It implies that I think it implies that I also raised him and I did not raise him.
Is he okay?
And he grew up thinking that I was his sister. Mm-hmm. That's the way that my parents left it. That my mom and Bill mm-hmm. wanted it to be. That's the way the neighborhood thought of it. But when he was around 13 years old, my mother insisted that I tell him the truth. I did not want to tell him yet. I wanted to tell him, but when he was an adult, I thought around 35, you know, he just turned 40. And he's about to turn 41. And so I would be like, yeah, now he's ready. But I would have never told him then, but I was doing some youth counseling. I was working as a counselor with children at risk kids and had done a lot of work with children and was really good with kids. So my mom thought he needs to hear it from you. I did not want to tell him yet. So he wasn't ready, but he was already hearing rumors in the neighborhood because they were still in the home where all of that took place.
The baby you gave birth to is now an adult and he has four daughters.
Yes. Yes. He has four daughters and he is a wonderful, wonderful father. He is completely devoted to his wife and his daughters, and he just adores them and they adore him. He's a fantastic father.
Right.
So he and I thought we had a relationship that was a good relationship, but when he found out that I was sharing my story, of course, he did not want me to tell it. He didn't want me to share it. He has four daughters of his own.
Oh my
And yeah. And so I just did not, you know, I had to make a decision. I had to make a choice. Do I protect, do I protect a family of five?
Right.
Or do I help thousands and thousands of people if I can, if I can and prevent and maybe prevent this from continuing. So that was the choice that I made.
That I mean, you had so many choices that were absolutely unfair.
Sucked.
Because you've discovered that your superpower is telling your secret. That is your superpower. And yet someone might judge you and say, well, you know, this baby, he deserves a good life. And how could you leave that baby in the hands of these predators? Oh my God, you were 14. What more, what did you know? You know, I mean,
Plus like this is also going to sound crazy, but this is the truth. You know, Bill, when Bill came into our lives, he was someone that gave us, me and my brothers, like so much of a childhood. As crazy as this story sounds, he
was grooming you.
Well, that too, but you know, he was also kind of a child himself. And so like he liked toys and he liked us to have toys. His story is incredible, incredible. And, you know, he was somebody that we trusted more than we trusted our mother because we had a relationship with him. And that's also how he groomed me.
Exactly.
But my brothers still very much loved him. And he made sure that we had, like motorcycles and go-karts and cut trails in the woods for us to play in and took us roller skating and all this he did by himself. And so when I knew that he would absolutely adore the child, that he would, I knew he wouldn't hurt him in that way.
Right.
And I didn't really have any control over it, to be honest with you, any choice in the matter whatsoever. But, and I stayed in that town as close as I could and kept going back to make sure that he was okay.
Right.
And
even though you were emancipated.
I hated going back in that house. I hated going back in that town.
Right.
I would have left that town as soon as I could, you know, and I did. I left it like 21.
Yeah.
But I kept going back for every holiday, birthday opportunity to stay in their lives and my brothers and their children's lives and just continue doing that. And even at my detriment, because
of course
it was traumatizing and triggering every
massive
time I did.
Massive triggers. Yeah. So now as a transformational life coach and workshop facilitator, you help others heal. How does this work serve you? And when did you have that first feeling that you were, that your transformation was starting?
Well, I realized transformation was happening for me when I had gone to nursing school. Nursing wasn't right fit. Can't stick a needle in people. So not my jam.
Yeah.
My jam.
Yeah.
And I became a massage therapist. And when I was in massage therapy school, I learned energy modalities and Reiki. And I fell in love with Reiki. And
love
I had a very
Reiki.
Special teacher. Mm-hmm. And my teacher's name was Nancy Love.
Aww.
And she talked about the angels all the time. And it's an incredible little part of the story. But Nancy Love used to say, Edie, your story is going to be powerful one day. You're going to help people with it. Surround yourself with love and the angels and white light. Just surround yourself with love and angels and white light. Okay, so true story. So when I decided to prosecute and hold Bill accountable, I called the detective. The detective's name was Richard White.
Mm.
When Richard White showed up at my door, he showed up with his brother-in-law, whose name was Angel.
Of course. Oh my God, I love this.
So Richard White and Angel, and then we had to file with the solicitor's office, and her name was Mary Christina Theos. So I've got Love, Nancy Love, White Light, Angel,
Christina,
Mary, right. Christ, and God. Mary Christina Theos. So I was good. I felt good about the whole situation and I felt very protected. And so transformation started happening for me with Reiki.
And I just want to say, everybody listening, look for those signals because I see them. I remember I was getting my thyroid out. It was 2008 and a series of things happened that really was just truly magical. My Reiki energy healer's name is Christine. And so it was Christine who was helping me. So I had a little Christ there. The doctor that helped me get to the doctor I needed was last name was Christman. And the doctor that did the surgery was Angelos. So I had Christine, Christman, Angel. And I saw that and I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
So if you're ever really in a place, whether you are, you know, prosecuting your abuser or you are having your thyroid out, or you are just preparing for something that is very uncomfortable, look for those signals of comfort because they're there. They are there.
They're
and
there.
If you don't see them, maybe it's not something you should be doing, right? But if you see them, you're like, oh, thank you, God. Okay, I hear you. I feel you. I see you. I'm going forward. Okay.
The first time that I had that sign, like the first time I experienced was two. One's funny. I'll share that for another time. But this one is, I was at the Sheltons. It was my first night spending the night with them.
The family
I was terrified.
Who took you in.
Yeah. Took me in. I was terrified because I had hardly ever spent the night away from home.
Right.
And I thought, I'm going to hell. Because all I knew was the 12 commandments, honor thy mother and thy father. I'm like, I'm going straight to hell. I have not honored my mother and my father. So I'm on my knees and I'm saying a prayer. Please help me. Please help me. And I heard the voice say, go upstairs.
Hmm.
So I went upstairs. My room was in the basement and I went upstairs, opened the door and there was a lamp on with a Bible. It was the first thing I saw. I grabbed the Bible. I ran downstairs. I said, okay, I'm just going to open this up. And whatever I see, I know it's going to be for me. I'm just going to open it up. And the first thing I see, and I opened it up and it was the 27th Psalm. I had memorized the 23rd Psalm, but the 27th Psalm, I didn't know, but my birthday is the 27th of November.
Mm.
So I thought, I will always remember this. So Psalm 27, the first verse said, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about the light that I saw when I opened up the, and then I kept
Nancy
reading,
Love.
Kept reading. Yep. And I also, well, that came later. I was like, 15.
Oh, sorry. Got it. Ooh, timeline
but
was off,
light,
but the light was following you.
Yeah, when I opened up the door, you know, go upstairs, I open up the door, the first thing I see is a light.
Yes.
And then it says, the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear? And I was like, that's right, I don't have to fear. I kept reading, and I got, you know, when others rise against you, I will be with you, so I didn't feel alone. And then I got to this verse. Oh my goodness, Lulu, this verse, it says, when thy mother and thy father forsake thee, I will be with thee.
Oh.
That's in the 27th Psalm. It didn't say if.
It says when. Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I felt water poured over my head. I felt warm water being poured over my head. Like I was in harmony with my destiny.
First of all, I've never done this in all the podcast tapings that I've done. I have never taken notes because I just have the conversation. I am furiously writing down, not because I have to put them in the show notes, although I do, but I'm like, I'm taking notes from your story. I took notes from your story when I watched your the YouTube video of your Janie's Fund talk. You have been through the world's worst trauma that no child, no human should ever have to go through. And yet you are still standing in your faith. You are a warrior. You use your story. You have humor. You've trained at Second City. You're an actress. You know your purpose. You're looking for signs that are helping you know you're on your way, where you're supposed to be. Are you working on a memoir?
Yes, I am.
Yay!
I am. You know, I want to say something, though, when you said you know your purpose. I had a moment recently where I knew why everything that happened to me happened to me. Can I share it real fast?
Please.
I would love this. So I've been practicing transcendental meditation since May 19th, 2012.
Okay.
Transcendental meditation, 2 times a day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I get off of it, you know, and there was a time when I like got away from it and my life just started spiraling.
Yeah.
And then I got sober, found sobriety in a recovery program, love it. And then meditation, I started meditating again. Well, Bob Roth is the director of the David Lynch Foundation. Mm-hmm. And so I found transcendental meditation through Oprah, which is another connection.
As did I. She gave it to me as a gift, as well as all the employees who wanted it. And I started it in August of 2011. So I was a year ahead of you, although
I've been practicing
Reiki since 23, I think. But anyway.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I was one of the last recipients of one of Oprah's scholarships. So I got a partial scholarship to learn TM started studying, loved it. And then in March, when the pandemic hit, Bob started offering transcendental meditation online, on Zoom, every day, all day. There's a 7 a.m. East Coast and a 6 p.m. East Coast meditation, but there are replays all day. So I started joining, and Bob and I became friends. And so he and the David Lynch Foundation started working on, you know, they offer TM to victims of domestic violence, veterans of post-traumatic stress. So many people are being helped and healed with TM.
It is truly the gateway to healing.
It really, really is. And it's helped me so much. So I had this idea, bring this to Janie's Fund. Mm. So I connected Bob Roth and Richard Shaw, who is running the helm at Janie's Fund. He is just amazing. And Youth Villages, which services 30,000 children and children in the foster care system, and just goes on and on. All the social workers, the healthcare providers, the
we all
and
need
the
it.
families,
right?
So all the children who are in the program at Youth Villages, we're going to try and get them transcendental meditation. So I just did a big Zoom call with Bob, with Richard, and with Dr. Rebecca Lemons, who's in charge of the wellness program for all the girls at Janie's Fund and Youth Villages. Mm-hmm. So that is the greatest thing I've ever done.
That is truly that is truly a legacy you are building today that I have a feeling is going to grow into something absolutely bigger and better than you could have ever dreamed. And all it took was just like, oh, I'm going to you know, I studied TM and now I'm going to do this. Hey, it's a silver lining of the pandemic because it was offered and it was there. Yes. And it was like, okay. And now you've made those connections. And, you know, when we first started this podcast conversation, I said, what did it feel like to see all those young girls on their feet giving you, you know, this round of a standing ovation? And I saw their faces. I mean, you know, I'm always looking at the audience first and I'm like, wow, they are being transformed. You can see your story land on their hearts. And you said connection. And that's what this is all about. That's what this podcast is about. That's what I have found in you, a great connection, a great friendship. It doesn't shock me that you're friends with Steven Tyler and Bob Roth and Nancy Love and Richard Shaw and Rebecca Lemons, who are all people, warriors like you out there trying to help people with their story and get through the pain. And because when we speak our story and we write our story and we share our story, we don't have to tell every ugly detail. But when we do, we feel like, first of all, we're healing ourselves, but there's nothing more healing than helping someone else with their own healing. And that's what story does. And that is what you do beautifully. And, you know, I'm going to be like, I mean, your memoir is going to be a film. That's the first thing. So let's just start that with Apple TV and get Oprah on board. And let's get this memoir going so that it become a visual for those who are struggling, who are in the struggle. So many of us are in the struggle. So I just want to end this conversation that was hard, also beautiful, also funny. Paint the picture of your life today for those who are in the struggle right now, who think that they're never going to get out, and tell us where you are today and why they should keep fighting and why you're going to fight for them.
Ah, well, I'm going to fight for you because I love you. And, and I love people. And I believe had my mother had a Janie's Fund and a Youth Villages, her life would have been very different. Her choices would have been very different.
Right.
I believe, you know, there are God awful perpetrators on the planet and, we need protecting. Children need protecting, and I'm going to fight for people who need protecting. And there are people who are hurting and who are hurting others. You know, they say hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And so the planet needs healing. We need healing. We need more love and we need more healing. You know, what else did you ask me?
Well, I just wanted you to paint the picture of your life. Like, what is your life like today? I mean, you started when I asked you, how's love speaking? And you said, I'm so happy and it's beautiful and life is great. So it is well, I'll let you speak, but you're doing, you know, you have love and you have a partnership and you are doing all these cool things.
Sweet.
So you survived.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And I, you know, what I would say to people who are struggling, because that seems to be the people who find me are people who are struggling at some point in their life, and is to let go, you know, to really kind of, as silly as this sounds, to lean in. It's that phrase that everybody says, lean in. But what I would say is listen. Listen to the signs, as you and I were talking about. Mm-hmm. Listen to the voice inside. Mm-hmm. Get quiet. A lot of people don't want to get quiet when they have so much trauma. That's why meditation is so powerful, is that especially TM, you learn how to sink into the depths of, like, the ocean. There may be a tsunami going on the surface of the ocean, choppy waters, but down at the bottom, it's calm and it's clear.
And it's you. And that's where you find you.
That's where
equals God. You equals God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I always, like to say to my clients to whatever your problems are, give them more space instead of pushing against them. Mm-hmm. Give them space, give them a lot of room. Mm-hmm. You know, if we have a child tugging at us, mommy, 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 we don't say, stop, stop, get away. You say, yes. Yes, my love, what is it that you need? Yeah. And so it's the same with our challenges, the same with our struggles. Yes, my love, what is it that you need? And then, you know, I think the greatest transformations come when we meet them with grace and when we welcome them and when we allow them. You know, all my aha moments have first start out as a struggle.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah,
and there's a struggle, there's a challenge, and then I surrender, I let go, I give it space,
right?
I become more curious, and then
where can people find you if they want to work with you? Because you are a breakthrough therapist, you offer workshops, edallen.com, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Edieallen.com.
Edieallen.com. Of course, this will all be in the show notes. And then where can we find you on social media?
I'm on Healing with Edie on Insta.
Right.
And I will be doing a podcast of my own called Ha Ha Healing with a girlfriend. So we're combining healing and laughter. And
I love that. Ha Ha Healing. Well, that's, you were laughing the whole way through. And you know what? I love laughter. I love comedy. I love jokes. And, you know, the best way through healing. I think I even posted this once, like you want to be a good speaker or get healed, you know, do stand-up comedy, because it's really, truly, you're just letting it go and you're just putting it out there and you're just, you know, you're just like, what am I going to do? Cry? No, we gotta get through this.
Exactly.
We didn't have time to talk about your chakra dancing, but,
if
anyone's interested in chakra dancing, go to edieallen.com because it's super cool. Now I'm going to be dreaming about what the title of your memoir is going to be, because that's all I want to know.
People want to like turn my story into a movie, but you can't just trust your story to anyone
that. You can only trust that to Oprah. I'm telling
that's
you,
right.
The Oprah team can make your story. Lisa Erspommer, if you're listening, Edie Allen's memoir, go get working on it right now. I'm going to end with this. What is the last thing you do before you close your eyes at night?
I usually read a little of something, and usually something spiritual. And then I write down in a journal what I learned today. Mm. And then I say thank you.
Do you remember what you learned yesterday? Or one of these days this week?
Let's see.
I don't know if you have your journal there with you.
Think about what I wrote. Like, no, I'm not near it. But let's see. What did I write last night? What I wrote was to make sure that I get restful sleep.
It's important.
Yeah, because I'd been running and running and didn't get a lot of sleep. So one of the things that I'm like, okay, I learned that I'm cranky when I don't get enough sleep.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I can't thank you enough for sharing your heart. I want everybody listening to watch your clip. It's probably 12 or 15 minutes long. It is the most powerful speaking moment I've ever seen, because you tell this story, but you tell it in a way that doesn't make us feel scared, because we see the strength in you. And we know already the ending is that you survived. And we know you're going to help others and us survive. So I think that was just the way you physically were on the stage. And, you know, of course, I'm listening to your message, but all I want is your body and your dress, because you're beautiful and your style.
Oh,
and you have this, you know, presence, because you've trained at Second City and you've trained as an actress, and you know how to own that stage. And that, along with your powerful story, is why the people in the room rose to their feet and you raised $2.8 million for people who are suffering from abusers. So the people that you are here put on this planet to help. So thank you. God bless
thank
you.
Thank you.
Continue
thank
your
you
warrior
so much,
work.
Sally Lou Loveman.
And thank you. And it's been a true honor to hear your story again. And I
it was
learned,
an honor being here.
I learned more. So thank you, Edie Allen. Your love speaks.
Thank you. I love you.
Thanks for
treasure.
Changing the world. Okay. Thanks. I'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
I have loved speaking with you today, and I want to speak with you more. So follow me on all of my social platforms at Live Love Speaks on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want more stories like the stories we speak here on the Love Speaks series podcast, go to lovespeaks.com and pick up a copy of my new book, Speak. Love your story. Your audience is waiting to step up your speaking game and your human game. Check out my blog while you're there.
Sally Lou Loveman is a mom, speaker, author, former audience producer for The Oprah Winfrey Show, and founder of Love Speaks. Each week, Sally Lou and her crew have a conversation about how love speaks in their lives and how it can speak in yours. From kindness to composting, no topic is off limits. If you need a community to kickstart your heart, you need the Love Speaks series.
Thanks for listening. Your love speaks.